of the world-renowned weekly podcast. I am your host, Darren Torres, a.k.a. Analysis489. I keep getting questions, mainly from my friends, not necessarily listeners, because my listeners aren't necessarily my friends. You guys are, but my friends don't listen to this podcast. I don't know why. They're all a bunch of punks and suckers, that's why. Analysis 49 is my gamer tag. Anybody that's on Xbox 360 can add me on games such as Assassin's Creed. But I don't want to get too much into games right now because I will be having a video game episode next week. We've done a couple before. Me and my friend Christian, he will be on the podcast next week talking a little bit about Assassin's Creed 4. On the PlayStation 4, and I'm hoping to get another one of my friends who just recently got an Xbox One, was just released, so we will have a video game episode next week to talk about those systems. Currently, it's the word analysis, A-N-A-L-Y-S-I-S, and then the number is 489, which incidentally, for those people that are first-time listeners, or if you're returning listeners, welcome back. You guys know that the music blog is fenentertainment.com, F-E-N, which is pulled from the first three letters of the numbers 489. So that's just a quick explanation there. I don't think I've ever really talked about that before, but 489 Entertainment Group LLC is the umbrella that we all live under, and our projects such as VivariumHD.com and AWeekLate.com, which is hopefully where you're listening to this podcast from, but is also available on a number of different places on the interwebs, iTunes, SoundCloud, 49Entertainment.com, and AWeekLate.com. You can download those for free if you've ever paid for an episode. You haven't given me any money. There is a donate button on the main website through PayPal. PayPal! It's very secure, and I've tested it out. It does work. So if you've paid anybody else for these episodes, get your money back, because I only ask for donations. On with the show. For the new listeners, this is a podcast in which I review movies that are no longer in theater. Sometimes for the bigger movies, we will go and do one. Go check out the previous episode, which is episode 65 for Ender's Game. One of the best movies that I've seen as of late. And I am recording this one kind of late, so I don't know if I'm going to get a lot of time to edit it. I usually try to censor myself with all the ums and stalls, but since this is being recorded same day it's released, which lately I've been doing that a lot, I may not have enough time to listen to the whole episode before I edit it. So if you hear a lot of ums or football and family in the background, it is that time of year. I'm lucky to be doing an episode at all today. But the last time I did a few episodes, I promised that I wouldn't go another 2 weeks without doing an episode. It has been 2 weeks since I released the Ender's Game episode. But I would also have to mention that during the holidays, which I have said before, it's really hard for me to get everybody together because they have family, or today, basically, everybody that was a contestant for today's recording is either working or watching football. With this time of year, that, you know, I can't really blame anybody for that, or a lot of them are already with family. This coming Thursday is Thanksgiving, so happy Thanksgiving to all my listeners. And Matt Baca from the Chocaine podcast says that he really hates it when people, like, do a little shtick of all listeners, like all four of you. I know that's a shtick for most people, but it's not a shtick for me. I don't really have a specific way of knowing exactly how many listeners I have. But if SoundCloud is any indication, I think this podcast is doing okay. We've been up and running on SoundCloud for less than 6 months, and we've already broken 1,200 plays. There are, including this one, 66 plus episodes, I believe, total. We're starting to break the 90 mark, because in the first year when I was trying to get everything together and trying to figure out the format, I was making bonus episodes and stuff like that that weren't necessarily numbered, but SoundCloud keeps track of the total amount of episodes I have. This particular episode is episode number 66. So again, welcome to the new listeners and welcome back to the returning listeners. I hope you had a good couple of weeks. My football team already lost today, so I'm Dolphins can go eat a dick for letting me down 2 weeks in a row. Actually, no, they won last week, but you know what? This isn't a sports podcast. Speaking of which, I am in talks with a friend of mine who is interested in doing a hockey podcast, so hopefully we will welcome that in the new year. Keep an eye out for that. I'm not sure how many sports fans we have out there. I don't necessarily talk about sports almost never. We do have an affiliate, though, in Tampa, Rocket Sports and Entertainment. I want to give them a shout out. They've actually given us the Jason Mewes interview episode, which I posted. You can go on aweeklate.com and search for interview with Jason Mewes, and it'll pop up. It was probably about 5 or 6 episodes back or something like that. Probably more now. So that's that. This is episode 66. I decided to watch a movie that had popped up on my Netflix, I want to say around September. I didn't pay too much attention to it, but it's a movie called The Numbers Station. And it was released this year in 2013. It says April 26th. I'm not too sure how this movie got past me. This movie stars John Cusack, Malin Ackerman, and Liam Cunningham. I'm a huge fan of John Cusack movies. I'm not too sure how this one went past me. It may have been one of those video on demand movies that flew under the radar. But I heard that The Raven wasn't that good. That is on my Netflix, and that also has John Cusack in it, if I'm not mistaken. I may watch that soon. I'm a little discouraged because, and I don't usually let the IMDb ratings influence how I rate my movies, but they've been kind of spot on in correlation with my rating. Now, the rating system for this podcast goes from 0 to 110, 0 being the absolute worst movie you've ever seen that does not deserve to take up the digital space that it occupies, and 110 being the absolute best movie in the world that you've ever seen. Zero flaws, zero mistakes. And if anybody disagrees otherwise, they are wrong. This movie has an IMDb rating of 5.5, almost 5.4, which is kind of very low for John Cusack. For anybody that doesn't know, if you don't know who John Cusack is, you need to stop listening to this podcast and go educate yourself on some of his flicks. He's done. Now, this is all information through IMDb, which doesn't sponsor me or this podcast, but I just want to let you know where I'm getting my information from. He's been in movies like Being John Malkovich, which was kind of old. It's released in 1999. Movie called 2012 that was released in 2009, which to me was kind of terrible. He was in a famous movie from 2000 called High Fidelity, and another movie with Samuel L. Jackson in 2007 called 1408, which I haven't yet seen. But he is obviously the actor's actor. Maybe it's one of those things where in his later years, he's not as good as he was, because back in the day when he came out with the movie, it was basically Grand Slam. The one I believe he's most known for is Say Anything, And also, now this I'm thinking off the top of my head because IMDb doesn't say this. I'm sure if I scroll down far enough. But also, was it Point Blank? Something Point Blank. Let me see if I can find it. I'm gonna kick myself in the ass for not knowing this. Gross Point Blank. That's it. Gross Point Blank was a movie with Minnie Driver. Got me turned on to basically John Cusack and Minnie Driver. Great, great flick. Go check that out if you haven't seen it. This movie was directed by Casper. I'm gonna butcher his last name. Barfed. Barfod. Barfod. I have no idea how to say that. Let me see what he has directed. Anything I might know. It says, but best known for The Lost Treasure of the Knights Templar, which is 2006. It's got a bunch of kids in it. Maybe the IMDb rating has a point here because it doesn't look like this guy has done too many things that I would actually be interested in watching. But he has been directing movies, it looks like, or directing and acting since 1992. So that scares me a little bit. There aren't really that many credits that he has that would lead me on to think that this was going to be a good movie. Well, we'll see. Malin Ackerman, for anybody that doesn't know who she is, she's a gorgeous, gorgeous actress. I'm going to see if maybe the movie suffers because of some acting in this, but she's mainly known for Watchmen in 2009. She was in a movie called The Proposal, which I haven't seen. A movie called Couples Retreat. I think I may have seen that one. That has Vince Vaughn in it. I usually watch anything with Vince Vaughn. And if I didn't watch Couples Retreat, I'm pretty sure I saw like at least portions of it. Another one called The Heartbreak Kid with Ben Stiller, which I'm also pretty surprised I haven't seen that one either because I like a lot of Ben Stiller movies. What else? This movie is rated R. It runs about 90 minutes. And I don't know. I guess I don't really have that much to say. The. What do you call it? The summary reads thusly: A disgraced black ops agent is dispatched to a remote CIA broadcast station to protect a code operator. Soon they find themselves in a life-or-death struggle to stop a deadly plot before it's too late. So, other people that are in this movie: Liam Cunningham. I'm not too familiar. He doesn't even look familiar to me, but he was in Clash of the Titans, and I did see that. He was also in Safe House, and I did see that as well. Strange that I don't recognize his face. That seems to be about it. I don't really recognize any other names in this movie. That might be a reason why it didn't get that high of a rating, but I'm not gonna let any of that sway me. What you're about to hear is some intermission music for the new listeners. You can go ahead and listen all the way through. There is a section here where I will give you my rating in part two when we come back from the intermission music provided by our good friend DJ Aaron Bond from Orlando. What up? And I'll basically let you know, you'll hear a super cheap sound effect that is a countdown for spoilers. So you can basically listen up to that if you're not going to stop this and watch the movie with me. Or you can spoil it for yourself and listen the entire way through if I give it a bad rating and you don't care to see it. That's totally up to you, but you do get the choice to do that. So, that being said, what else am I missing? I feel like I'm forgetting something. I'm watching this on Netflix, full disclosure. I think that's it. So, pause this, go watch the movie, or listen to the intermission music, and come back and listen to part two of episode 66 in the number station. See you in a bit. 2 of episode 66 of a world-renowned week-late podcast for the Number Station. Just finished watching it. Hope you did too. If not, like I said, you will hear the spoiler countdown here in a little bit. It's going to be kind of quick. This movie is very straightforward. So I'm just going to go ahead and get into the rating so I can start talking about the spoilers. As per the usual, especially in the second year of making this podcast, I've grown accustomed to taking notes on movies that I watch at home. It's really hard to take notes inside the theater, especially these days when all the notes are going to be like on a digital device. And as you know, there are warnings at the beginning of the movies that, you know, there aren't any mobile devices or recording devices allowed. And if you take out your phone to text or what looks like texting, they could definitely kick you out of the theater. So, thankfully, I wrote down a few notes for this movie. Just a reminder that this movie was given a 5.4 on IMDb. And while I disagree with that, and I will be giving that to you in a second, I want to go over some things as to why I gave it the rating that I'm going to give it. So, at the very beginning, the intro, the introduction to the movie, I don't know why I just mentioned what intro is short for, but there's that. It basically lays out the premise of what a number station actually is. Why this couldn't have been done in actual dialogue is kind of clear. There's a 3 or 4 sentence introduction that explains that officially number stations don't exist per the American government. But as we've seen during recent months with the Snowden stuff that's going on with the NSA and the CIA and the FBI and all of the three-letter agencies, we can't trust our fucking government. So we know that basically everything that's classified or top secret that they deny would probably more than likely be true. In the last episode of this podcast, I was with my brother and a friend of mine, and we've all basically been in the military. We've had a number of years in training and stuff like that, so I know for a fact that stuff like this probably does exist. Not probably, but does exist. And if they're making movies about it, there's probably a reason why. Somewhere along the line, someone came across this storyline. Could this happen in real life? Probably. Has it happened in real life? Probably. So I'm always very open-minded to these sort of movies. And I think that people that gave this movie such a low rating may not have approached this movie with the open mind that they should have, but you'll see for a couple different reasons why it may or may not have ended up that way for the average civilian watching this movie. First of all, may I say that if you go on Netflix or IMDb, or just Google it, the number station, John Cusack does not look like John Cusack on the cover of this flick. I don't know why I think that's important to say. It's just, he just looks weird. I like to give, and I usually do before the movie even starts, on the writer of the movie. In this case, it's F. Scott Fraser. Besides some strange credits, including Tetris Evolution, He's listed as miscellaneous crew on a video game. Game evaluation team member for THQ as Scott Fraser. That's kind of weird. Hot Wheels Stunt Track Challenge, The Fairly Odd Parents, Breaking the Rules, the video game. It's very, very weird. He's not. The only other credits that he has under his belt as writing are The Audubon, which is in pre-production right now. But I would like to give him props because, as a writer of the screenplay, I think it was done very well. And the director, Casper Barfoed, if that's how you pronounce it, did a great job in translating the screenplay, I would imagine. I didn't have any problems with the way the movie was directed. The soundtrack matched the feeling of the movie. The acting was not terrible. I didn't think that anybody did a bad job in directing in this movie. The only, and I think it loses a point, the only thing I really have to say is Liam Cunningham's character, who played John Cusack's boss in this movie, it was very hard to understand. I'm usually really good at picking apart accents and understanding what's being said to me, but this guy, it seemed like he was rushing through his lines, he didn't enunciate, and I couldn't, a lot of times I had a hard time understanding him. And that was kind of detrimental for me. I think that he said a lot of things at the beginning of the movie that were referenced in other parts of the movie, and had he said them a little bit clearer, it would have made more sense and made the story progress a little bit. So a couple points, maybe one or two, maybe a point lost off that. But the first thing I wrote down was that the intro was intriguing. It basically mentioned how there are basically civilians or military contractors that used to be prior military or have never been in the military are set at these particular locations that use shortwave broadcast radios. In today's digital age, basically, you are only handed a few analog communication tools that can't be traced. So, in a lot of ways, old school technology is better than digital technology for reasons such as this, is that there are ways to communicate with each other that are untraceable. Basically, shortwave radios and pen and paper. And so, in the Black Ops world, there exists this group of covert individuals that run around taking orders from an anonymous radio station that give them a group of numbers to decipher so that they can figure out their next target or their next mission or their next, basically, the progress of their existence, basically. We're introduced to John Cusack, who seems to be a regular dude. This could have been like a Nicolas Cage movie, but if it was, I probably would have given it like a 5.4. My rating is definitely above that. I love Nicolas Cage, but sometimes there's no emotion in his voice, and it's just like, I'm glad they picked John Cusack for this because he put a lot of humanity behind his role as a cold-blooded killer. So that's a plus. He's basically assigned. He's basically. He screws up at the beginning of the movie without giving too much away before the spoiler countdown. He basically screws up at the beginning of the movie with one of his targets, and he is reprimanded by getting put into a sort of babysitting situation with a civilian contractor, which is Malin Ackerman. And 2 months later, from when the incident happened at the beginning of the movie, he basically finds himself in a remote part of England where he's watching over this girl, and it seems to be a sort of low priority sort of operation. Now that I'm actually talking about it, we did do a review for Safe House, which this seems to be very similar for that. And I do believe that I brought up Safe House in the first part of this podcast. I'm not sure why, but this movie reminds me a lot of that. And it might be one of those things that got the movie a lower rating than it should have, but sometimes there are movies floating around in Hollywood for a really long time, and when they get made, by the time they get made, they resemble another movie that may have just come out. For example, White House Down. What is it? White House Down? No. Is it White House Down? White House Down and Olympus Has Fallen. Both very similar movies. From what I hear, Olympus Has Fallen was kind of a joke, and White House Down was the good one, or vice versa. But when that happens, the one that comes out after the first one usually takes the hit for being the copycat. I don't necessarily want to blame this movie for that, so I won't hold that against it. So just know that going into my rating here. A couple of things that lost points for me. There's a part where Malin Ackerman's character has to enter a password from one of the workers. And it's a little lucky, well, one of the workers on a previous shift, and it's a little lucky how she finds it in a string of internal emails. But per video games or PC games, such as, I don't know, you have like these problem solvers, like Myst comes into mind. For any hardcore gamers out there, look up Myst, and it's basically a puzzle-solving riddle solver. There's no dialogue, you just kind of wander around looking for clues to try to see what to do next. And at the very beginning, John Cusack's character has to do that. So I would have done the same thing. I kind of just let it go in that particular situation. The other thing that kind of gives a plus for this movie for me is that there's no romantic involvement between John Cusack and Malin Ackerman's character, which to me is always a plus. I hate the cliche, fall in love, I have to save you because I love you. In this particular movie, they're both just trying to do their jobs. Their personal lives are a little bit separated from each other, which does come into play towards the very end of the movie. I will explain that in the spoilers. But for whatever points this movie lost, it kind of gained for me. The only reason this movie is rated R is basically because of the blood. There's a lot of killing in this movie. It's not gory blood, it's just blood. Regular blood that you would probably see after someone gets their hand chopped off, which does happen in this movie. And I don't know, for some reason, I just think that it's so cliche to have the male and female lead roles in a movie fall in love with each other. And movies that don't take that course of action are sort of going off the beaten path, but to me, I applaud that. So kudos to whoever decided to do that. The description says a disgraced Black Ops agent. I wouldn't say he was disgraced, he just screwed up once. It wasn't like he did anything terrible. But the entire start of the movie has him screwing up an operation that he's probably done a million times. Now, before I get into the rating, I do want to say that the ending of any movie is something that usually sticks in people's minds. I mean, it's the last thing that they remember from the movie, it, obviously it's, it stays with them. But I think that's what got this movie a bad rating online to begin with. I hate it when people say the entire movie sucks if just the ending is lackluster, because I don't think that's fair to the hour and a half that just spent watching the entire thing. If you're going to pin an entire movie on just the ending, what the fuck is the point of watching it? Do yourself a favor, don't do that. Sometimes the ending of a movie makes up the entire thing, but not... I can't really think of anything off the top of the head that would sort of propel that idea. So I'm going to go ahead and give this movie my rating, because anything I talk about after this is going to be a spoiler. So I want to give this movie 7 3/4. I know it's a little strange. I used to make up these weird decimal ratings, but for the people that actually care about real numbers, that's what I would give this. I would give this movie 7 3/4 stars. I suppose everybody looks for a twist. This movie didn't necessarily have one. But again, that's going into the spoilers, so there you have it. If that's a good enough rating for you to go and watch this John Cusack movie, I would recommend pausing it and going and watching it for yourself, and then come back and listen to the part where this next cheap sound effect comes in with the spoiler countdown. There you go. Anything after this will be a spoiler. So if you've chosen to listen, it's not on me anymore. Here we go. So basically after my rating, there could have been a twist, which would have been predictable. But there wasn't one. So maybe, perhaps the predictability in this movie that you think you know and was expected, per the formula of other movies of this particular genre, since that isn't present, that just might be the twist in and of itself. The fact that you were waiting for one and you never got one. I don't know if that's a cop-out. Certain movies, all movies don't have to have a twist, is what I'm saying. I think we've gained so much predictability of a formula of what a good movie's supposed to be, that when something doesn't happen that we're expecting, we think it's bad. But think about the norm for a second, and any movie that doesn't have a twist, we might need to see more of those before they start becoming the norm again. I think it may have hindered what people were expecting in the movie, thus the mediocre online rating. Another thing that kind of lost a point for me, maybe, and maybe for others as well, I guess I should digress to explaining the beginning of the movie for anybody that hasn't seen it and continue to listen to the spoilers. The disgraced black ops agent, in quotes, basically, we find John Cusack's character at the beginning of the movie to be, well, his name is Emerson, and I always call them by the actors' names instead of their actual character names, just because it's easier for me to keep track of it that way. He's not disgraced. He basically makes a mistake that leaves a witness out and about after his initial hit. He is basically on the receiving end of the cryptic numbers that are sent out by these number stations. At the beginning of the movie, he's speaking with his boss, he's in a car, and they're talking about an interesting anecdote where the boss is mentioning a report that he received from one of his agents that did an autopsy on a corpse from a leftover hit or something like that. Again, I didn't really understand the gist of it, and I could have turned on the closed captioning on Netflix, but I didn't. Basically, what he was talking about, this is Liam Cunningham's character in the movie. The gist of it was the story that when we pass away, the vitamins and minerals left over in our bodies basically equal, if we were to monetize that, would basically equal less than $5. So what he's essentially saying is that the human life at the end of the day, when we've perished and passed, is worth less than $5. Kind of depressing, and was one of those like arbitrary conversations where you're just like, okay, that happened. But at the end of the movie, it comes in, and I'll explain that in a minute. Hopefully, I remember to come back to that. While I've already said there could have been a twist, basically what happens is John Cusack's character and Malin's character are basically starting to become friends when they're ambushed on returning to their 72-hour shift. They're basically locked in this bunker. It used to be a military base that, see, the government officially doesn't exist, which I mentioned. Unofficially, it's where these people get locked up for rotating shifts, and there's a numbers person and there's a protector. Basically, John Cusack is Malin Ackerman's protector. She's reading these numbers, not knowing where they're going, what she's ordering, but it's her job. That's what she do. That's what she does. And so she, at the beginning of the movie, is talking about re-upping for the next term or whatever it is. She wants to recontract out so she can continue doing what she's doing. There's this sort of theme at the beginning that's presented by the botched killing. Now, he definitely kills the person, but he leaves a witness. Runs, luckily finds the witness's wallet laying around, which also kind of gets a point off. Who would leave their, who takes their wallet out at a bar and leaves it on a table while they're playing pool is beyond me. Maybe I've done that before, but I don't know. I keep my wallet close. So this witness is followed by John Cusack and Liam Cunningham, and there's a, he follows the guy into the house, basically kills him, but daughter, I guess, somebody that's left over as another witness inside the house, sees her father getting killed and isn't surprised by it at all, but starts asking John Cusack, why did you do that? Now, if it were me and I saw my father or whoever that was in my own house being murdered, I wouldn't stop to ask why. I would turn around and run. Maybe that has something to do with the lackluster score as well. But she ends up getting killed, shot and killed by John Cusack's boss, which leaves him basically traumatized. To me, it's kind of not believable because this is what he does. I don't know why he freezes at this particular point, but the reason these movies are written is because we're inserted into a person's regular day when shit goes awry and we're just supposed to believe that it's true. This movie was far from being perfect, hence the score that I gave it. However, a lot of people might think that that by itself would give it a lot lower score. But there's a particular progression of events in this movie that you're just sort of made to believe. You can't really, you don't really have a choice. Fast forward to them being ambushed, and on their new shift, they find out that a group of men want to bring down the organization that John Cusack works for because they don't believe in the brainwashing, if you will, to turn them into assassins and killers, mindless robots. And then when said mindless robots break down, they're written off through the same program that they're actually a part of. Come to find out that Malin Ackerman's character needs to reverse the 15 numbers that just went out because they coincide with 15 higher heads of the company that John Cusack works for, one of them being his own boss. Which at that particular point I thought may have been the twist that somehow he was involved, but he was actually just a regular hit of the entire time. During their entry to the bunker and their ambush, she receives a large gash on her leg, which should have kept her limping throughout the entire movie. But for some reason, about 15 to 20 minutes in, it's like it never happened. She walks around without a limp, and I think that's a huge loophole in continuity. But if you're not looking for it and you don't remember it, it's not really a big deal. I mean, they're really in an underground bunker. She doesn't do that much walking around, but when she does, after the first 15 minutes that she cuts her leg and John Cusack repairs it for her, she's not limping anymore. That took a point off for me. Come to find out that the people that broke into the bunker were really after her. The shift that got there before them got there early, and so the female that was in the previous shift was killed along with the male, but only after receiving the codes that they needed to send out the broadcasts. After Malin Ackerman realizes that these broadcasts have already taken place, there's no way of them knowing how many of these people have been killed on the 15-person list, but they need this particular email that I mentioned earlier to reveal the original cipher needed to send cancellations for the broadcasts that have already been sent. That made complete sense to me. I think that was a little bit lost on other people, which might have something to do with the low rating. She sends out 14 of the 15 broadcasts before one of the original three bandits, if you will, breaks back in, leaving John Cusack outside because he has to go back to the truck to get a cell phone that was left in the glove compartment, which was complete and utter forecast, what do they call it? Foreshadowing. I was fine with that. I knew that was going to come back into play. That's kind of another thing that got a point for me in this movie because if you work on a military installation and if you have any type of top secret clearance, you know for a fact that before you enter any government building, no cell phones are allowed. That's just the way it is. So she leaves her cell phone in their vehicle before the shift, and that does come into play later on. While he's out getting the cell phone so they can call for help, basically, because the internal line has also been compromised by the same group of people, he finally gets a cell phone, calls for help, and then gets real help to come to the rescue. The gunman enters the facility, giving himself a 10 to 15 minute head start on John Cusack. John Cusack gets back in the building. He is now after Mal the bad guy's after Malin Ackerman's character before she could send off the 15th broadcast. While he's looking for her, and the bad guy being where he is, she fucking gets shot. And the bad guy, ends up getting into a fight with John Cusack. And what I really like about this movie is, in so many other movies before it, whenever somebody gets shot or gets into a fight, they somehow end up surviving and coming back. And, shooting the person in the arm, or sort of like a horror movie where no matter how many times you shoot the guy, he comes back to get you at the end. Every single person that John Cusack shoots anywhere besides the head, he makes sure to give them what we call the military a double tap. If you shoot them in the chest, and this particular bad guy had a bulletproof vest on, and I saw this moment where John Cusack's shooting him, like, literally 5 to 6 times in the chest in a bulletproof vest. And I'm thinking, this guy's obviously going to come back after he goes and rescues Mel and Ackerman, and maybe they get into another skirmish. No. Shoots him in the fucking head. Make sure your target is dead. All right? Biggest mistake in every movie, shoot him in the leg, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the fucking brain, he's dead, he's not going to come back, there's not going to be a sequel, that motherfucker's dead, alright? For the new listeners, just in case you haven't noticed, this does have a, an explicit tag in iTunes, NSFW, not safe for work kind of thing, unless you're listening to this in headphones, then it's okay. Moving on. After she gets shot, he takes her back up to wherever he works on her. He removes some of her items while she's out. But before that, she basically gives him the last code to redact the 15th and final broadcast. While he is sort of operating her on her a second time, he removes some of her items, one of which is a wedding ring or an engagement band. Or maybe I should have said a wedding band or engagement ring. Through the entire movie, she never mentions a boyfriend or a husband. So, basically, after calling for help, he knows that somebody's coming. He finds a bunch of C4 in this place and basically sets a timer for 20 minutes to go and blow it to shit. He clearly wants to get the hell out of there. In the final 15 minutes of the movie, he runs across the guy, the last guy that pretended to be the emergency dispatch, and basically gets shot by that guy, but not before shooting him and then going around to the other side of the car and double tapping him in the head, making sure he's dead. Cannot come back and kill me if you're shot in the head. Rule number one. That being said, when he blows up the station, I have an issue with that, because while he was, you know, supposedly cold, and while she was just a regular civilian, they never really got to the point where they knew anything about each other's personal lives. The entire movie, she should be dead. She's wanted dead by not only the bad guys, but John Cusack's government bosses. She knows way too much. She's a civilian. She's already working in a top secret location that she's sworn to keep quiet about. But when these number stations are compromised, the people that work there have to be retired, which is a nice word for killed, dead. That being said, she survives, they both end up in the hospital, and John Cusack's boss gets there, and he's like, well, basically, John Cusack tells his boss, basically, I told you that she was dead, because I wanted you to believe that, but the bunker has more than enough bodies to claim that she's dead for the American government, blah, 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 to cover their tracks, whatever the case may be. And the ending of the movie, which most people may find lackluster, is the part I kind of had a problem with but did not base the rating of the movie on it. If she had a regular personal life, which they do get into a conversation about, that's probably a really good part of the movie that I'm not going to spoil. If anybody's watching it or wants to watch it after that, then that's something that you should look for. It's a really good part in the movie where they talk about, like, what do you really have to live for outside of these walls? We never get that with her. And the fact that they show him removing that wedding band or engagement ring leads me to believe that while he did save her life, at the very end of the movie, after she wakes up from the hospital, they're basically, like, driving down this long bridge, letting you know that the 7 to 10 days head start that John Cusack wants from his boss, basically to disappear, he says, start the timer, start the countdown. 7 to 10 days, we're gone. Movie ends. I don't have a problem with that. The only thing I do have a problem with is, why show the wedding band? I don't get how she's going to be okay from waking up from her bullet wound, waking up from her quasi-coma, and finding out that she has to live the rest of her life with this dude in seclusion, not letting anybody know that who she is, what she's doing, how she's still alive, none of that. At the very beginning of the movie, the foreshadowing is super blatant, and it basically gives away the end of the movie, and it says, she says, oh, if something bad happens here, I may have to spend the rest of my, or I think I'll be stuck with you for the rest of my life, or something like that. And he goes, be careful what you wish for, it just might happen. That was like the really moment in this movie. I was just like, okay, completely gives it away, but it doesn't make the movie predictable. For that reason, I gave it the score that I gave it. So hopefully you guys agree with me. I rather enjoyed it. I would probably wouldn't watch it a second time unless I was with someone that hadn't seen it already. I didn't have that many issues with this movie, but the parts with the continuity and the ending, while I'm kind of contradicting myself that the ending sticks with people and that's the last thing I remember, for different reasons, I'm giving this movie what I gave it because of the foreshadowing and the ending. The director didn't do a bad job. I recommend this for people to watch as a rental, obviously. Can't go see it in the theater. But it's not a waste of time. So go check that out. I'm glad that I got this much content out of the movie. I always have a really hard time when I struggle, struggling by myself to do an episode. I don't ever think I have a lot to talk about, but I don't think I did that bad. I'm going to forego the TV and video game sections just because of what we have coming up next week for the PS4 and Xbox One reviews. I don't know if we're going to be reviewing the actual systems or just the games we're playing on the systems, but we'll see. So tune in for that next week. Should be next week, hopefully. On the next episode, whatever that may be. For all things music, there are some new tunes on the music blog that I mentioned at the very beginning of the podcast. It is 489, the number is 489entertainment.com, or again, fenentertainment.com, takes you to the same place. You can follow all the music stuff and the movies we'll be watching and the TV shows that we'll be reviewing on that blog, and follow at FENPromos on Twitter for all of the TV shows and stuff like that that I watch during the week that I'll probably be talking about on the next episode. Follow me on GetGlue. I think it's / FEN Entertainment or FEN Promos. I'm not sure. But you'll see those Twitter updates happen with some GetGlue stuff. Just gives you a good idea of what I'm doing, what I'm watching. And also for all the music stuff, go there as well. A Week Late podcast on Facebook, at A Week Late on Twitter, and for any questions, comments, hopefully not complaints, send emails to fans.aweeklate@gmail.com, at A Week Late on Twitter, and facebook.com/aweeklatepodcast. I would like to thank everybody for listening and putting up with me. I hope you found this entertaining and somewhat funny. I'm usually funnier with more people around. But, look, it's free. So if you didn't like it, it's not for everybody. Go fuck yourself. All right. Now that I alienated what's left of my listeners, thank you for listening. Hit me up on all those places I talked about before. On soundcloud.com/aweeklate as well. And I will see you a week ago. Cheers. That's the show. Peace. I'm out. All that. Bye.